Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You know, we have 23 million people in this country that have alternative minimum tax burdens, close to $1 trillion over the next 10 years. And that's not even on the president's radar screen. And so within the system, there can be more equity without increasing the tax burden.
Manhattan Congressman Charles Rangel on ABC This Week yesterday, speaking in his role as chairman of the Tax Law Writing Ways and Means Committee. And like it or not, April 15th is creeping ever closer, don't you know? So you better start thinking about your taxes under the current laws. Well, this year, there is a variety of changes in the law and new rulings from the IRS that you should know about as you get your 1040 and other forms ready to go. They include new tax breaks for energy efficiency measures, tougher rules if you have income in your children's names, a tougher test for charitable contributions of used goods, more bracket creep for that dreaded alternative minimum tax, as mentioned by Congressman Rangel, and more. So with us now to update us on some of these changes and to take your calls and emails are two guests, Mark Luscom, Principal Federal Tax Analyst with the company CCH, which specializes in tax and business law information, and Jay Safier, a CPA and principal in the New York accounting firm of RSSM. Thanks so much to both of you for coming on. Happy tax season, and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
And is one of you on a speakerphone? Could I ask you to pick up the handset?
Sorry.
Thanks a lot. It helps so much for radio sound quality. And we will open up the phones at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for any questions about things that may be new in the tax laws or rules this year. Or you can email Brian Lehrshow at WNYC.org. That's the email address. And again, the phone number 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's begin, Mark, with the alternative minimum tax, which was originally designed to make sure the wealthiest Americans pay something, but now hits more and more middle-class taxpayers. Can you say where we are with the AMT this year?
Well, we've sort of put off the horror stories for one more year, as we've been doing for a while. The original problem was the AMT exemption amounts were not adjusted for inflation. The regular tax brackets were being adjusted for inflation. The AMT exemption was not. So gradually, just with over the course of time with inflation, more and more people were being caught by the AMT.
So is it possible to say who roughly or, for example, might get swept in for the first time this year who wasn't last year?
Well, actually, because of the increase in the exemption amount, to a slightly higher level than was the case in 2005. The goal of the Congress was to actually keep additional people from being caught by the AMT with that increase in the exemption amount. So in theory, we should expect about the same number of people to be caught by the AMT this year as last year. However, individual circumstances may differ. Basically, the people most likely to be caught by the AMT are people in high-tax states, such as New York, people with a lot of kids, and people who have special circumstances, things like incentive stock options or maybe a lot of home equity, line of credit interest, those sorts of things.
People with a lot of kids?
Yes, there was actually a well-known case back in out of Kansas where I believe a family with about 10 kids and only, I think, an income of only $70,000 or $80,000 was caught by the AMT and sued, saying this wasn't what Congress intended, and they basically lost. The court said that may not have been what Congress intended, but that's what they did.
And let's see, one little correction. Congressman Rangel was speaking on Fox News Sunday, not that other network that I mentioned. Credit where credit is due. So, Jay, since you're a New York area tax accountant, does this hit New York area taxpayers disproportionately because wages and the cost of living here are higher, but the AMT doesn't take that into account?
Well, you're right, it doesn't. Actually, it hits any high tax state, as Mark indicated. I mean, it's not only New York and the East Coast, but even a state like California.
And if the AMT does apply to you, then you lose your deductions for state and local taxes, correct?
Amongst others, yes.
Amongst others, which in high tax, high local tax states like New York and some others around here, then, you know, it's like a double whammy.
That's true.
All right. Let's see. Before we get off the AMT, though everybody's blood pressure is getting high, probably just a lot of middle-class listeners' blood pressure getting high just listening to this. There was a New York Times article on the AMT yesterday in Week in Review, I think, and it seemed to show that not only is it creeping deeper into the middle class because it's not indexed for inflation, as you say, but it's a failure in its original intent to make sure the wealthiest Americans pay some income taxes. The number paying no taxes was about 500 people in 1969, which inspired the law, but it's several thousand today. So does that mean, Jay, that it closes middle-class loopholes better than loopholes for the very rich?
Well, certainly middle-class, however that's defined, is basically those that are folks that have your common deductions, your common itemized deductions. And so, yes, they're being disproportionately hit.
All right. Let's take a phone call on something else that's new this year. Carl in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carl. Carl, you're on the air. All right. Okay, we can't. All right, we'll get back to Carl in just a second. Let's see. I was reading that charitable deductions, Mark, are getting a little tougher to claim for clothing and other used goods that people donate. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, that was part of the piece of legislation passed in 2006. Basically, Congress, the IRS and Congress became concerned that a lot of people were claiming charitable deductions for clothing and household items, and then the charities in turn were basically selling them for their rag or junk, metal content, and not selling them as a usable used item. And so the fear was the charities weren't getting the benefit of the deduction. And so what they, effective, I believe it's August 17th of 2006, so this mm-hmm. is sort of splitting up the year, you can no longer get a deduction for these donations of clothing and household items unless they are in what's called good used condition or better.
And how is that defined? Or is it just a judgment call? Or is it something that the IRS would never be able to check up on anyway once you give that bag of stuff to, Salvation Army or Goodwill or whatever it is?
Well, it's not well defined at this point. Maybe eventually Congress or the IRS will come out with better guidance. But at this point, it's pretty much up to the individual taxpayer to be able to, if you're ever audited, to be able to support it's in good use condition or better. And things you might do would be, document what you're giving, take pictures of it, and maybe get the charity to state back to you that these items were in good use condition or better, those sorts of things.
Who wanted that change? How does that wind up on Congress's radar screen? Did charities clamor for it?
Oh, no, charities weren't clamoring for it. I mean, it's sort of like the changes to the auto donations a couple years ago. The charities are basically happy to get whatever they can get, and if the donor gets a big tax deduction, that really doesn't bother the charities any as long.
Yeah.
As they
so who's the constituency for this change?
So it's really the IRS as part of its effort to close this tax gap that's been identified, we're giving a better tax break than the charities mm-hmm. are getting. So mm-hmm. so let's and that's costing the government revenues. So this is another tool we can use to help close the tax gap.
Now I think we can get to Carl in Manhattan. Carl, you're on WNYC.
Yes, hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my question has to do with the telephone excise tax. And going through the form, this is a one-year event for us taxpayers. Going through the form, I'm seeing that basically, there's two different lines. There's one for local calls, and there's one for bundled calls, and the ability to take the excise tax going back basically about, I believe it's about 3.5 years. One of the problems I'm seeing, at least personally doing this, is that on bundled dollars. It's more than just a long distance, for instance, cell phone service. I know the IRS, from what I've been reading, has been having problems with people at the beginning of this tax year taking the deduction. Some people are taking a lot more, and other people aren't taking it at all.
Now, Let me back up a step. Jay, there is some kind of refund people can get
the
taxes we pay on our telephone bills, correct?
Yes. It's, the IRS has a standard, I think, $30 to $80 or $60 based upon the family size that they'll give you right off the top, unless you have the information to go back 3 years and actually pick up the actual deduction, the actual excise tax.
You mean if you have your old telephone,
bills,
and you can go back and and prove that it's more than
that's
that.
That's correct. You can take the higher up.
You can take the higher up. Now, that's a federal tax, the federal excise tax, right?
Yes.
So why is a federal tax deductible on your federal taxes?
It's not a deduction. It's a credit. Yes, it's a credit. You're getting a credit for that telephone excise tax.
And this has never happened before?
This is a one-time shot. Because,
why?
I think around April it was determined that the government should not have been charging the excise tax. I might be wrong on the dates. But somewhere. So as a result, they're giving you this refund in the form of a credit, which you will then either apply, which you apply against your tax liability and either get back in the form of cash or apply it.
So it's a refund for an overtaxation.
That's correct.
So Carl, what were you having the confusion over?
Well, the problem I'm having is that when the government allows us to do this, that there are basically two columns on the form. The excise tax is only supposed to be related to long-distance excise tax, but there's also a column related to bundled service. And most, at least in my case, my cell phone service is bundled service. Many people have bundled service for their residences as well, too, which doesn't break apart long distance and excise tax.
Uh-huh.
So,
Mark, that's an interesting dilemma.
Well, I think that's why bundled service was listed. It's basically trying to help taxpayers to say, this is only supposed to be for long distance excise tax, not the local, but we recognize that some people have bundled service, so if you have bundled service, we're going to allow that excise tax as well, in addition to, if those people who have long-distance service, then they can only take the long-distance, but if you have bundled, then you can take the excise tax for the bundled.
Right. Okay, Carl, I hope that clears it up enough to let you do your taxes. And again, Mark, just to be clear, it sounds like anybody in America who has a phone who itemizes their deductions can take this credit.
Yes, that's correct. And also, it's important to remember that even if you don't owe tax, this is what's called a refundable credit, so you can...
They'll send you a check.
They'll send you a check, right?
All right.
Brian,
Jay, go ahead.
I thought it's not a question of itemizing deductions.
So even if you don't itemize deductions...
It's a credit against...
Right.
It's a credit against the
right.
tax.
Right, so... To be clear, I misspoke. Even if you don't itemize deductions, because it's a credit, as long as you fill out an income tax form, you can claim it. Is that correct?
Yes, and even people who normally wouldn't have to file a tax form can file a form to get the refund.
All right. We are talking about changes in the tax laws and tax rules that took effect in 2006 as we moved toward the April 15th deadline for filing your 2006 federal income taxes. We'll take more of your questions at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or via email to brianlehrershow@wnyc.org. Stay tuned. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Speaking of taxes, tomorrow Senator Schumer joins us in conversation with several New York swing voters, some of you who we invited and you contacted us because you think you could vote for a Democrat or a Republican in the next election. So swing voters in conversation with Senator Chuck Schumer tomorrow on the topic of property taxes and education. That ought to be very interesting tomorrow at this time right here. But right now we continue to talk about some of the things that are new as you fill out your tax forms this year. as we are not that far anymore from April 15th. So if you haven't done it yet, you better start thinking about it. My guests are Jay Safier, a certified public accountant and principal in the firm of Rosen Seymour Shapps Martin & Company in New York, and Mark Luscombe, a lawyer and CPA, principal federal tax analyst at CCH, a provider of tax law information for tax professionals. And our phone number, 212-433-WNYC. Our lines are full at this moment. Our inbox, never full. Brian Lehr Show at WNYC.org. And Angie in Greenbrook has a question about something new. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Brian. Nice show.
Thank you.
Last year, we got the total, like the outside of our house redone. We got vinyl siding and all new energy efficient windows. Is that something that I can get a deduction on my taxes this year?
Jay, it is, isn't it?
Yes, there is. There's a credit they are allowed for installing efficiency devices in your house up to $500. The criteria is that it be to your primary house and that house be located in the United States.
Great. So the new windows and the siding, so I could just take a $500 credit?
Well, you have to work the form, because I believe that within the form, each type of there are limitations on each type of improvement. I believe windows cannot exceed $200, but in total, if you have the other types, then you might get the $500, but it's just you have to work the form out.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, that gives me a question. What if you live in a co-op and the co-op is getting the windows done for the whole building, which happens to be the case for me right now? Can an individual take a tax deduction for some portion of the maintenance that might be going to the window project?
I would suggest you go to the co-op board and find out how much of it is going for the windows, and then you get your proportionate amount.
Uh-huh. So potentially, yes.
Yeah.
Mark, anything else new on the home energy efficiency front?
Well, in addition to the things that we were just talking about, like new siding, insulation, windows, doors, there's also going into that same $500 lifetime credit are some internal systems such as heat pumps, main circulation, air conditioning systems, those sorts of things. And then there's a separate energy credit related to solar installations, and they're up to a $2,000 credit each, one for solar hot water heating systems and the other for solar photovoltaic systems that produce electricity. You can get up to $2,000 credit for each of those types of systems.
And I was reading the IRS website page for deductions on vehicles, and it looks like you can get new deductions this year for electric cars and other kinds of clean fuel vehicles. Is that correct?
That's correct. The main type of vehicle out there that people would be able to purchase would be a hybrid vehicle, which are getting a lot of attention recently. But other things like liquefied natural gas vehicles or fuel cell vehicles, which are less readily available, all have different types of credits. There used to be in 2005, there was up to a $2,000 deduction for hybrid vehicles. Now it's a credit, and it varies with the efficiency of each type of hybrid vehicle. So the amount of credit depends on the particular model of hybrid you're looking at. So.
Well, we started the hour talking about the alternative minimum tax, and we have a few people calling in with questions about that and how it might affect them. And Bob on Staten Island, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I make about $75,000 a year, and I have five children. And I make my 401k or 457 deduction so that I don't get caught with the alternative minimum tax. I actually, and it makes a big difference on my part, because the child tax credit that Bush instituted is $1,000 per child. So I get actually back from the federal government about $2,500 and pay zero in tax, as opposed to paying about $4,000. What is the amount that it is currently set if they don't do anything?
Jay, can you give him a number?
Not quite. Which amount are you talking about?
What income level do I have to have? Because I always try to set my...
Well, if you're married and filing, I think the exemption under the...
I'm good for this year. I'm worried about next year.
He's worried. Mark,
for 2007?
Yes.
He's worried about falling under the alternative minimum tax.
Actually, I don't know that offhand whether they set the rule, the exemption yet for next year.
No, under current law, the increased exemption amount is only for 2006. So for 2007, the exemption amount, unless Congress does something further, would fall back to, I think, something like $45,000 for married filing jointly. So they say that the number, if not Congress does nothing, the number of people caught by the AMT would jump from about 3 million in 2006 to perhaps 23 million or so in 2007. So it would be a great increase in the number of people caught. And Bob, you might be one of them. With it's hard to say. There's so many variables. But living in New York and five kids, it's theoretically possible. Yeah.
But that's to be determined by the current Congress.
Yeah.
Yet for the 2007 tax year.
And if you recall, they had an extender this year, so comes the end of the year, they might not even set it. They may not set it till some short period of time after.
Huh. Carol in Manhattan has another question about that. Hi, Carol.
Hi. We fall under the alternative minimum. What deductions are allowed if you come under the alternative minimum?
Jake?
Well, a couple that are allowed are on the itemized deductions. Home mortgage interest deductions are allowed, while home equity line of credit interest is not. So the interest to acquire or improve a residence would be allowed for the AMT. Charitable deductions are allowed for both regular tax and AMT purposes. And there's a couple other categories in the casualty area and the medical area. There's less generous provisions for the AMT, but to some extent those deductions are allowed, but they aren't as generous as for regular tax purposes.
What did you say before, medical?
Casualty.
Oh, casualty. Okay. That's it then. So basically it's mortgage interest and charitable deductions.
Mm-hmm. Those are the two that come primarily to mind. Some of the above-the-line deductions that you get, whether you itemize or not, are allowed for AMT purposes also. For example, contributing to an IRA, if you're eligible to do a deductible contribution, that's allowed for AMT purposes. And some of the other deductions allowed on page 1 of the Form 1040 would also be permitted for AMT.
All right, Carol. And here's another question about that telephone excise tax credit. Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I have both a landline and a cell phone. So I would think I was entitled to $60. And my family size is just me and my wife. So can I just put down $60 and go for it, or do I have to fill out any other form or attach a
Jay, is that the way it works? And I'm going to cut him off because maybe he should get a new cell phone.
Yeah, well, that credit is allowed based upon the family size. So if you just take a look at the table and whatever it is for two, and that's what you take.
Another change this year, and we have a few more minutes with our two guests who are talking about changes in the law or changes in the IRS rules for tax year 2006 as we move toward April 15th. Another change that I read about this year, more of income earned in your children's name is likely to be taxable. Is that correct, Mark?
Yes, it's sort of the common name for that is the kiddie tax. And what had been the case up until 2006 was that if unearned income, such as dividends, interest, that sort of thing, earned by your child, if the child was under age 14, that income was taxed at the parent's rate, regardless of the income of the child. The idea was to avoid a tax planning strategy where high income parents would avoid a tax on those investment assets by putting it in the hands of their small children and trying to reduce their taxes by doing that. So the rule was under age 14 up and through 2005. In the middle of 2006, they changed the law to retroactively to January 1, 2006, change that age to under age 18. So now anyone under age 18, any child under age 18 who has this unearned income, that will be taxed at the parents' rate as well. And they did it sort of retroactively, so there could be people who had already transferred assets to those younger, to those children in those in between years, 14 to 17, who may have gotten caught by that change.
Before you go, Jay, since you practice tax law in New York, anything new in the state or local tax laws this year in any of our areas, you know, states, or do they just tag along with the IRS?
Well, you know, in New York State, for example, allows where you have the 529, we put money into a 529 plan, a college plan.
For your
kids?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, New York allows you to either get a credit or a deduction, which is different than the federal. So that's been there for a while already, and it continues for this year.
Which is better, a credit or a deduction?
You work it out, you see. It depends.
Okay. Anything else?
Let me see. On the new, no, I know they're working on the budget, but it hasn't come through yet. There are rumors of changes to be made, but nothing that I've really gone into because it hasn't been passed.
Mark, the last word, anything big we haven't mentioned?
Well, I guess the one other thing maybe for people who have fairly high incomes and are used to being maybe phased out of their itemized deductions or exemptions because of their incomes, starting in 2006, that phase out starts to itself phase out. So people who, say, would calculate a certain amount of phase out of their itemized deductions or exemptions, that amount phased out will be reduced by one-third in 2006. So that's a pro-taxpayer thing, and people who assume that they're going to get phased out of those things, they might want to take another look because it'll probably be a little better this year.
At least it's a pro-higher-income taxpayer thing.
I'm sorry. Also, Brian, you might tell your listeners that because of the extenders that were enacted after the forms were printed, the federal forms were printed, certain deductions or which didn't make their way into the tax forms are allowed.
Oh, that's an important point. I read
about
that.
You might want to remind them that where you're living in a low-income tax state, you have the option of the sales tax. There is the deduction for educators that didn't find its way. And I would suggest to your readers, too, that while they may think it's daunting, the 1040 booklet is not that difficult to read. I mean, it takes time, but I think anybody who is looking to do his or her tax return by himself certainly should take the time to get the booklet. You can download it from through the computer and just slowly read it as they do it.
I'm so glad you brought that up because the educator's deduction, which I guess that's the replacement for actually sufficiently funding public education. If teachers have to pay, I think it's up to $250 for supplies out of their own pockets,
they
can get a tax deduction for that. And that was going to expire at the end of 2005, but it was extended for the 2006 tax year. But it wasn't extended until so close to the end of the year that it didn't make it into the forms, right? So that's an example of the kind of thing you're talking about. So people really have to not be misled by the forms that are available and look at what's really really available to you at irs.gov and lots of private sites too. So Jay Safir, a certified public accountant and principal in RSSM and Company in New York, and Mark Luscom, principal federal tax analyst at CCH. Thank you both very much for all this information.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, we'll play excerpts from the Clinton and Obama speeches in Selma, Alabama yesterday, and get your reactions. Stay with us.